Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Coming up, we're going to hear some of the highlights of yesterday's impeachment trial in Washington, D.C. We'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. We're going to talk about white privilege and whether or not that was involved in the way the Capitol Hill rioters were treated. And there's some new information about how the Capitol Hill riot came about. So we'll talk about all that today. And take your phone calls right here on 88.5 FM. First, several listener comments about yesterday's program. Here's what several listeners had to say.
Yeah, thank you for MNF. I would like to maybe leave a thought or a question concerning the Trump and the impeachment. What about the possibility, this is a question, of buying Trump off or making some kind of legal settlement? Maybe it would be something like pay off all his debts, but he has to tell all in a verifiable way and that he's not allowed to leave the country. So maybe just the thought of legally settling with him. Thank you. Pat Dunnigan, Bloomington, Indiana.
I think there might be one more phone call comment. Let's listen and see if there is one more.
Hi, everyone. I want to tell you about an event this weekend sponsored by Florida Veterans for Common Sense. We'll be holding our annual Thomas Paine birthday celebration, and this year we're presenting our annual Thomas Paine Award to Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Binman for his courage in speaking truth to power, just as Thomas Paine did during the American Revolution. We'll highlight some of our activities on behalf of homeless vets and to address global warming. Join us on Saturday night, the 13th at 7 p.m. via Zoom. Register for this free event at floridaveteransforcommonsense.org. Thank you.
Couple of listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. In Washington yesterday, in the Senate, Democratic prosecutors and Donald Trump's impeachment trial wrapped up their case, arguing that dire harm from his false and violent statements will long damage America's democracy unless the Senate convicts him and bars him from running for office in the future.
For 2 days, prosecutors said Trump spent months riling up backers with claims that the election was stolen, then summoned them to Washington and ordered them to fight like hell.
He said it, and they did it.
House impeachment manager Joe Neguse and fellow prosecutors said the rioters who ransacked the Capitol say they acted on what they saw as a direct order from the commander-in-chief, mounting a deadly attack to what prosecutor Ted Lieu called the president's glee.
President Trump did not once condemn the attack.
Trump's lawyers are expected to take less than a day to present their case, and the ex-president is likely to be acquitted, with several Republicans saying the Democrats case did not sway them. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Now we're going to hear more about the arguments made yesterday in just a moment here on WMNF on 88.5 FM. Former President Trump's defense team will have up to 8 hours beginning at noon today to make their arguments, and the proceedings could last into the evening. The Trump attorneys have said that they're going to rest their case sometime today. After the defense concludes its case, the organizing resolution of the Senate calls for senators to question the parties for up to 4 hours, followed by 2 hours of debate and votes on whether to call witnesses and the admission of evidence. Then comes 4 hours of final arguments and a final vote to convict or acquit. It is possible, but not certain, that the trial could conclude tomorrow. So we'll let you know as we find out more about how long the proceedings are going to go on. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard here so far, you're welcome to email us in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. I'm going to do something a little bit unusual, and that is I'm going to hear a, we're going to, you and I together are going to hear a discussion about white privilege as it pertains to the riot and the invasion of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. We're going to go to Vlad TV, which is an African-American TV online network, and we're going to hear the rapper Boosie discuss his thoughts about the invasion of the Capitol on January 6th. Now, Boosie is a controversial figure and does not have a perfect record, but he is one of the most important rap artists in the country. So we're going to hear his thoughts about the invasion right now, and the discussion of white privilege comes right up. So I want to get your take on this. You can email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. Here's Boosie, and you can find this interview on Vlad TV.
He had a big rally in Washington called Stop the Steal. He told all his hillbilly followers and trailer trash, you know, Republicans that they need to fight, and he's never going to concede, and they need to go do something. And these fools went and attacked the Capitol building.
Put shit everywhere in the Capitol. Feces.
Actual shit.
Feces everywhere. It shows you white privilege. If they would have been a black mob, it would have been 600 dead on the outskirts of the White House. White privilege.
I agree. When you were watching that on the internet or TV, and you saw that mob of people breaking in through, and
I just shook my head. I said, that's just white privilege. It's just white privilege, you know. And that shows you that comes from a higher power. You know, that comes from even over that, you know, they got shot callers can call, bro. Like, that comes from a higher power, bro. Like, you know, for somebody to tell them hold fire on, you know, like if that was black people, they would have been murdered outside those gates and shot down. They wouldn't have never made it past those gates. Well, if we got sticks in our hand or if we stand, they mace us and what you think they would have did if we would have crossed that damn gate at the White House? How you shoot black people for pulling over in a car with music now? What if we would have jumped that motherfucking gate at the White House?
There were a couple of black people in there. Not a lot. I saw maybe two or three.
Them ain't black. They ain't black.
What are they?
Feces.
Well, in the process of this... This coup attempt, four of the attackers got killed.
Right.
There was the white lady that tried to jump through the window got shot in the face. A fat white girl got trampled to death. The ironic part about her is that, I guess, previously she was walking around with a flag that said, "Don't tread on me." She got treaded on. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be laughing, motherfucker. One guy, I think, had a stroke. And another guy, I think, tased himself and died.
Crazy. That's white privilege, though, because if Obama would have did that and some black people would have came in there, he would have been, Obama and Michelle would have been charged for all the murders for people who died.
All right. One cop got killed.
Obama would have been charged with that. Everybody who died. If Obama, as a black, would have did some like that, what Trump did, man, that was just like some, come fuck this bitch up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's straight. Well, he's straight.
Here's the part I don't understand,
that nigga,
right?
That nigga Trump, gangster, man.
Well, number one, remove Trump out of that equation and put Al Sharpton on that stage, telling all his followers to go fuck it up, and then five people die in the process. I guarantee you that Al Sharpton would be in prison right now, will be in jail right now with no bond.
No, you could do the same thing. No, yeah. Do it with Obama and Trump.
Okay.
It would have been the same thing. Obama, if Obama would have tweeted and did the shit Trump did, he would have been gone. If Obama would have did 10% of what Trump did, he would have been gone.
I agree.
It's white privilege, man. It's nothing else. If Obama would have went and said, "I'm not getting out of here. Y'all come and stand up and fight," and five people would have died, Obama would have got all those murders for exciting a ride and got charged with that. But it's black privilege, and it goes way back to our ancestors.
White privilege.
Well, white privilege. It goes way back to our ancestors, you know. It's just So.
Well, that was a rap artist, Boosie, interviewed this week on Vlad TV, and making the case that the treatment of the rioters on Capitol Hill was an example of white privilege. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And you are listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. In a few minutes, we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls and get your take on all of this. Well, yesterday, House impeachment manager Congresswoman Diane DeJette made the case that many of the rioters who stormed the Capitol on January 6th came under President Trump's orders, and she showed video where the rioters claimed that they were invited by Donald Trump to move on the Capitol.
In the next few minutes, I want to step back from the horrors of the attack itself and look at January 6th from a totally different perspective, the perspective of the insurrectionists themselves. Their own statements before, during, and after the attack make clear the attack was done for Donald Trump, at his instructions, and to fulfill his wishes. Donald Trump had sent them there. They truly believed that the whole intrusion was at the president's orders. And we know that because they said so. Many of them actually posed for pictures, bragging about it on social media, and they tagged Mr. Trump in tweets. Folks, this was not a hidden crime. The president told them to be there, and so they actually believed they would face no punishment. The defense argued in their briefs, and they argued again here on Tuesday, that the insurrectionists were acting on their own, that they were not incited by President Trump or acting at his direction. This is in their brief, quote, "They did so of their own accord and for their own reasons and are being criminally prosecuted." But that's just not the case. It's not what the insurrectionists actually said. They said they came here because the president instructed them to do so. Leading up to the attack, the insurrectionists said they were coming to D.C. for President Trump. He invited them with clear instructions for a specific time and place and with clear orders. Stop the fight, or to fight to stop the certification in Congress by any means necessary. The crowd at Donald Trump's speech echoed and chanted his words. And when people in the crowd followed his direction and marched to the Capitol, they chanted the same words as they breached this building. Now let's return to this speech for a moment. During the rally, President Trump led the crowd in a Stop the Steal chant. Here's what that chant sounded like from the crowd's perspective.
This is a very great term that all of you people really came up with. We will stop the steal.
Soon after, the president basked as the crowd chanted, "Fight for Trump." And when he incited the crowd to show strength, people responded. Storm the Capitol, invade the Capitol. Here are both of those moments, but from the crowd's perspective. We also have another perspective from this moment, online extremist chatter. At the same time as the people in the crowd shouted, "Take the Capitol building," as President Trump said, "Show strength," a person posted to Parler saying, quote, "Time to fight, civil war is upon us." Another user said, quote, "We are going to have a civil war. Get ready." An analysis found that members of civil war quadrupled on Parler in the hour after Donald Trump said, "Show strength." When the insurrectionists got to the Capitol, they continued those rally cries. Insurrectionists holding Confederate flags and brandishing weapons cheered the president's very words. You heard them chanting, "Stop the steal." And as the crowd chanted at the rally, the crowd at the Capitol made clear who they were doing this for. They also chanted, "Fight for Trump." And it wasn't just that they were doing this for Mr. Trump. They were following his instructions. They said he had invited them. And in fact, as we heard, he had invited them. As one man explained on a live stream he taped from inside the Capitol, quote, "Our president wants us here. We wait and take orders from our president." Footage from inside the Capitol shows when the insurrectionists first got into the building and confronted police, the mob screamed at the officers that they were listening to President Trump. The insurrectionists argued with law enforcement that they shouldn't even be fighting them, because they believed that the commander-in-chief was ordering this. This was the person's understanding. When President-elect Biden went on television that day to demand an end to the siege, one woman asked this.
"Does he not realize President Trump called us to siege the place?"
The examples of these types of comments are endless. Don't worry, I won't play all of them. But it wasn't just the words of the insurrectionists that proved that they did this in response to orders from their commander-in-chief. We can see this in the fact that they were not hiding. One rioter in a live stream at the Capitol said, quote, "He'll be happy. We're fighting for Trump."
"Let's call Trump, yes! Dude, let's tell Trump what's up.
Trump would be very upset.
And he'd be like, no, just say we love him. We love you, bro. No, he'll be happy. What do you mean? We're fighting for Trump."
And again, this was not an isolated incident. The individuals in this slide posted photos of themselves committing these crimes. Trump supporters who had broken into the Capitol were taking selfies, streaming live videos, and posing. In fact, they wanted the president to know, "This is me." In fact, you can see the person wrote on his own posting, "This is me." And if there were any remaining doubt, after hours of prompting, when President Trump finally told the insurrectionists to go home, only then did some of them begin to listen. As you previously saw, at 4:17 p.m., Mr. Trump released a pre-recorded video saying to the mob, "Go home, we love you, you're very special." Shortly after he tweeted this video, a few of the insurrectionists who had seen it could be claiming victory and telling people to go home because of Donald Trump's message and instructions. You saw earlier the insurrectionist Jacob Chansley, who told someone, quote, "We won the day." A little before that video of Chansley, he said the same thing to the crowd through a bullhorn and instructed them to go home because of the video that President Trump had tweeted. Let's watch. after the attack, the insurrectionists made clear to law enforcement that they were just following President Trump's orders. They didn't shy away from their crimes because they thought they were following orders from the commander-in-chief, and so they would not be punished. They were wrong. After the attack, there were dozens of arrests. These were federal offenses, including assaulting the police. When law enforcement interviewed the people who were at the Capitol on January 6, they once again said it was because the president told them to be there. Robert Sanford was seen in this widely circulated video throwing a fire extinguisher that struck a Capitol police officer outside the building. A witness told the FBI that Sanford said he had traveled to Washington, D.C. on a bus with a group of people. The group had gone to the White House and listened to Donald J. Trump's speech and then had followed the president's instructions and gone to the Capitol. Folks, the insurrectionists didn't just make this up. As Sanford's lawyer explained, you're being told you gotta fight like hell. Does fight like hell mean you throw things at people? Maybe. The lawyer added that his client, quote, wouldn't have been there if it weren't for the president. Now, Sanford wasn't the exception. He was the rule. In their statements after the attack, insurrectionists routinely echoed what they had said before and during the attack. They were there because the president told them to be. Now look, the lawyers who are saying that their clients were told to commit these acts by Mr. Trump, well, they know that putting the blame on the president doesn't exonerate their clients. They're just saying it, frankly, because that's exactly what happened. Another Trump supporter who's been federally charged is Texas real estate agent Jennifer Ryan. Now, Ms. Ryan has given many TV interviews in which she says she was only doing what the president asked her and others to do. She also recorded video before the rally talking about the mob's plans for violence. And here's what she said.
Personally, I do not feel a sense of shame or guilt from my heart from what I was doing. I thought I was following my president. I thought I was following what we were called to do. He asked us to fly there. He asked us to be there. So I was doing what he asked us to do.
Ultimately, yes, we were going in solidarity with President Trump. President Trump requested that we be in D.C. on the 6th. So this was our way of going and stopping this deal.
If it comes down to war, guess what? I'm going to be there.
We're all going to be up here. We're going to be breaking those windows.
Yet another Trump supporter who was arrested after breaching the Capitol, Douglas Sweet, explained in a media interview why he did it. Referring to Donald Trump, Mr. Sweet said, quote, he said, hey, I need my digital soldiers to show up on January 6th, and we all did. Some of these individuals who joined in the attack on our Capitol did so as part of violent racist groups, which have been officially condemned by our government. Daniel Goodwin is a self-proclaimed member of the Proud Boys. He was one of many. On November 7th, Goodwin tweeted a picture showing the Proud Boys logo surrounded by stand back and stand by, and the quote, again, stand back and stand by, and await orders from our commander in chief. Look closely at this slide. You are looking at an image of Goodwin's own tweet. He was such a loyal follower of President Trump that he used the president's photo as his own profile picture on Twitter. Now remember, President Trump told them to stand back and stand by at the debate. They took it as a call to arms. And when he called them to arms, they were all ready to act.
You're listening to a presentation yesterday from Colorado Congresswoman Diane DeJette, making the case that many of the rioters who stormed the Capitol on January 6 came under President Donald Trump's orders. And this is 88.5 FM. Here is more of Congresswoman DeJette.
They were waiting for their orders, which they got on January 6th. And Goodwin followed those orders. He stood ready as others broke into the windows at the Capitol and climbed inside. Here he is on another of the insurrectionist live stream in one of the first floor hallways of the building. When it became clear that Donald Trump was not going to save these folks from prosecution, when it became clear that the commander-in-chief had given false commands that went against this country, some of his supporters even expressed regret, and they said they felt duped. Here's Jacob Chansley again, who we saw in a video claiming victory after the president told the rioters to go home. Earlier in the afternoon, as you'll recall, Chansley carried a spear as he breached the Capitol, entered the Senate through the gallery, and went right here onto the Senate floor. Chansley left a threatening note for Vice President Pence right there on the Senate dais. It read, quote, "It's only a matter of time. Justice is coming." On January 7th, Chansley spoke to the FBI, and he said that he came as part of a group effort with other patriots from Arizona at the request of the president that all patriots come to D.C. on January 6, 2021. On January 14th, Chansley's lawyer gave an interview to Chris Cuomo in which he said that Chansley was there, quote, "at the invitation of our president, who said he would walk down Pennsylvania Avenue with him." In fact, Chansley's lawyer now says that Chansley felt duped by the president and he regrets what the president brought him to do. This man who ran through our halls, who ran into this chamber, who sat right there on the dais, and who wrote a note for Vice President Pence that he was coming for him. He and those with him declared they would remove us from office if we went against Donald Trump. Now he's saying he would not have done any of that if Mr. Trump had told him not to. Chansley's not alone in his post-arrest confession that he was following the directions of Donald Trump. As more and more of these people have been charged, the confession and the regret simply cascades. More and more insurrectionists are admitting that they came at Trump's direction. When Riley June Williams, known for allegedly helping steal a laptop from Speaker Pelosi's office, appeared in court on January 21st, her lawyer said to the judge, quote, "It is regrettable that Ms. Williams took the president's bait and went inside the Capitol." Troy Smocks, who was in the Capitol riot on January 6th, posted online that day, quote, President Trump told us to fight like hell. He also posted that the president, quote, said that our case was a matter of national security. Samuel Fisher was charged with disorderly conduct and illegally being in the Capitol on January 6th. That day, before the attack on this building, he wrote on his website, quote, "Trump just needs to fire the bat signal," and quote, "then the pain comes." The lawyer for Dominic Pozzola, a leader of the Proud Boys, who was the first person to break inside the Capitol, said that President Trump effectively told his client and others, quote, "people of the country, come on down. Let people know what you think." Quote, logical thinking was, he invited us down. Pozzola's lawyer went on, "these were people acting in a way they've never acted before. And it begs the question, who lit the fuse?" End quote. On January 6th, we know who lit the fuse. Donald Trump told these insurrectionists to come to the Capitol and stop the steal. And they did come to the Capitol. And they tried to stop the certification. They came because he told them to. And they did stop our proceedings, but only temporarily, because he told them to. Have you noticed throughout this presentation the uncanny similarity over and over and over again of what all these people are saying? They said what Donald Trump said, and they echoed each other. Stand back and stand by. Stop the steal. Fight like hell. Trump sent us. We are listening to Trump. The riots that day left at least 7 people dead, more than 150 people injured, members, senators, and our staffs, all traumatized to this day. Damage and pain to our Capitol, damage and pain to Americans, damage to our police force, and damage to other nations who have always seen us as a bastion of democracy. All of these people who've been arrested and charged, they're being accountable, held accountable for their actions. Their leader, the man who incited them, must be held accountable as well. But as I said earlier, you don't have to take my word for it that the insurrectionists acted at Donald Trump's direction. They said so. They were invited here. They were invited by the President of the United States.
The rioters, in their own words, at the Capitol on January 6th. So what do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. We heard a report from the Associated Press. We heard the views of an African-American rapper on the riots, and we also just heard from there Congresswoman Diane DeJette from Colorado making the case that many of the rioters who stormed the Capitol on January 6th came under President Trump's specific orders. So I'm going to read some of these emails. Mark from Brandon says, I couldn't agree more with the opinion of the rap artist you played. That's Mark's email. Thank you, Mark. And then Lou writes this. Great clip from the rapper really drove the point home about white privilege. It's real and it's deadly, writes Lou in Plant City. And then Ronald writes, was wondering if being impeached is treated like an indictment. When Trump is acquitted by the Republicans, can he then be indicted by a court of law on these charges? Or does the double jeopardy rule apply and he can't be tried again on these charges? That's a really good question, Ron, and I do not know the answer, but I think it's going to be talked about in the next few days. Wendell from St. Petersburg writes, it is astounding with all the evidence presented, the American people, along with the Senate, are still on the fence about whether or not 45 committed a crime against the American government. This is why our justice system is so whacked. Our legislature can't recognize evidence and truth when it's presented right in front of their faces, right? So Wendell in St. Pete. By the way, I've got some new reporting from investigative journalist Greg Palast, and we're going to play that in a moment. Let's go to Michelle in Tampa for our first call. By the way, if you want to call, 813-239-9663. Michelle, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning. You know, I watched the trial all day, and I am on my way home so that I can watch the other side of the argument. I realize that they don't want to admit that Trump incited this, that he called for it, and I think it's obvious that he did, but I don't understand how they can get around the fact that he did nothing once it started. He put his vice president in danger. He put all of the Capitol police officers and the Metropolitan Police in danger. You know, one was killed as a result, two took their lives afterward. and there are multiple significant permanent injuries. How do you rationalize he did nothing? That is an obvious abdication of his oath of office. It's amazing to me that, in all likelihood, Republicans are going to hold the party line. I consider myself an independent. I do truly do not believe, I don't understand party mentality. I just don't understand it. If anybody has a reason for that, I just don't understand party mentality. But, you know, where was he after it started? How do you get around that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people wonder why he didn't call in reinforcements to push back the crowd out of the Capitol.
Exactly. People were getting hurt. People were getting killed. And what did he do? He did nothing.
Michelle, thanks a lot. Thank you for your phone call.
You're welcome.
All right. We're getting the views of a lot of people here in the Tampa Bay area. Let's go to, here's somebody outside the Tampa Bay area. Sharon's in Michigan. Sharon, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
For me, I guess the bottom line is it makes me sad the number of people that were so desperate for this kind of leadership that they'd respond so quickly to what the president asked of them. And that is something I just can't get over, is the number of people who responded to him.
Yeah, I think as Americans, we all feel pretty free and independent and feel like, well, nobody's going to tell us what to do. But here's a bunch of people who were told to march to the Capitol and invade it, and they did it.
And want somebody to tell them what to do. Want that kind of, even misguided leadership, but want that kind of leadership. And I guess anger-based leadership. So that I don't know how to get past. And that's what keeps me awake at night.
Yeah, and Sharon, if there are 44 or so members of Congress or 43 members of the U.S. Senate who are going to vote against conviction this weekend, what do you make of that?
There are a bunch of cowards who I had hoped that in time that they'd follow their own inner guidance rather than partisan loyalty. And I really thought by this time they would have gone the other direction. I mean, I'm a Democrat, and I thought Clinton should have been impeached for sleeping with staff, because you just don't sleep with your staff. So I just think you should, yeah. So I will be disappointed, and it will be a very black day in history, I think, for this country.
All right, Sharon, thanks a lot. Thank you for that.
You bet.
All right, great to hear from you. And let's go to Gino in Tampa. Gino, you're on 88.5 FM.
Yes. I would like to say actually three quick things. One is that they said that the Capitol Police said that when a mob was coming in, many of them flashed their police badges to gain entrance. Also,
and Gino, how do you know that?
Well, I heard that yesterday. The same way I heard about that FBI agent that I called in yesterday about. Same person said that. Sean King said that. He said that. Like I called in yesterday about the, no one knew about that FBI agent who had clearance.
Okay, so you're talking about Sean King's blog, and that's where you found this?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
All right. We'll have to look it up. All right.
Right. And did you get that guy's name for the FBI agent?
No, I didn't.
Because I called in yesterday and gave him the FBI agent, and they looked it up. There was another, and it wasn't talking about the Proud Boys guy. There was an FBI agent that they arrested. And I gave this name yesterday to you all. I called you all in. And one other thing I want to say, I mentioned I got to read these things more thoroughly. It's a major city in the West, and they just had a pilot program, 6 months. They routed all their 911 calls to this, I think it was over 50,000 calls to over 6 months to this program, not to the police. And they said not one person was killed. They went out and handled. They said it was a great pilot program. And I want to think it's Seattle. But was
okay,
it
well, we'll have to look that up. Gino, thanks a lot. Thank you for your phone call. Good to hear from you. And let's go to John in Gulfport. John, what would you like to say?
Hey, good morning, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. To a previous caller that said double jeopardy, this is a political trial. It's not a criminal trial. So double jeopardy doesn't apply.
Okay. Are you a lawyer by any chance?
No. I've already gotten this answer because I had the same question.
Okay. It's a good question, but thank you for the answer.
Yeah, no worries. Additionally, if these people had attacked the White House instead of the Capitol, what do you think would have happened to them?
If they had attacked the White House instead of the Capitol, I don't know. What do you think would have happened?
I think they would have been picked off one by one by Secret Service, and that's probably what should have happened here.
Well, we played the rapper Boosie. He said that there would be hundreds of people dead if it was a group of black people storming the Capitol.
And he's exactly right, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He's exactly right. Even Lindsey Graham said that yesterday. He was confused as to why these people weren't picked off because they were threatening the Congress.
All right, so what do you make of now President Trump's going to get a pass? What do you make of it?
I don't think he's going to get a pass in the long run. He's going to get a political pass, but not a criminal pass.
All right, we'll see. John, thanks a lot. Thank you for that.
You got it.
All right. Let's listen to one more section of tape, and this is from investigative journalist Greg Palast. He broke this news earlier this week in the Tom Hartman program. He says that the sponsors of the January 6th rally at the Ellipse repeatedly promised in writing that there would be no march to the Capitol. That's what they promised in writing, and we all know what happened. But let's listen to an interview that Brian Ross, the former investigative reporter for ABC News, who now has an online TV show, his interview with Greg Palast just yesterday.
To help us get a better understanding of what happened there, we're joined by two investigative reporters who've been taking a close look at this, Greg Palast and Zach Roberts. And Greg, let me start with you. There wasn't supposed to even be a march, was there?
Right. The sponsors of the Trump rally on January 6th at the Ellipse, which is the Washington Monument, absolutely said it's not in our permit to march. They promised the Washington Metro Police, we will not march. They told the White House there cannot and will not be a march. We're not set up to do it. It's dangerous.
But everything changed when the president called on his supporters to march to the Capitol.
We're going to walk down, and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down. We're going to walk down. Anyone you want, but I think right here, we're going to walk down to the Capitol.
Brian, remember, if you're moving tens of thousands of people across a mile and a half of Washington, you have to close the streets, you have to have police barricades, ambulances, porta potties, and of course, monitors to make sure that people don't go out of control. But they did.
At the same time, another rally was taking place at the Capitol, led in part by a Republican operative named Ali Alexander, who later said he worked with three Republican congressmen to organize the rally.
I was the person who came up with the January 6th idea with Congressman Gosar, Congressman Mo Brooks, and then Congressman Andy Biggs. We four schemed up of putting maximum pressure on Congress while they were voting so that who we couldn't lobby, we could change the hearts and the minds of Republicans who were in that body hearing our loud war from outside.
Alexander had earlier in Georgia helped lead protest against Republicans who failed to endorse President Trump's claims of voter fraud.
More like the house is on fire.
And what was the reaction of the crowd when he said that in Georgia?
Oh, they all started cheering. They started cheering USA, USA, and chanting, you know, Trump, and they all chanted America first, which has, you know, become a rallying call beyond Make America Great Again for these basically white nationalists that have started taking over the Republican Party.
And Greg, what you and Zach have documented really is the intersection between the far right and the Republican Party.
Well,
there's not much distance between them, right?
Yeah, I was very shocked when especially Zach uncovered, because he does go undercover for us, and went into their organization. And found out that Ali Alex, after we had reported on his incendiary remarks, the Georgia Republican Party and the National Republican Senate Committee, headed by Rick Scott, decided to use Ali Alexander after this threat to be the keynote at their meeting for Get Out the Vote to win the Georgia Senate runoffs. They wanted to bring in his 200,000 followers as Get Out the Vote troops for the Georgia runoff, even though they knew very well, after our reports and others, that he was constantly making violent threats. Also, we have him on film yucking it up with a Nazi holding a giant swastika flag saying, well, let's talk about what we have in common, which is quite extraordinary.
So what do you think this means in terms of the Republican Party? Are they at the point now where they are really literally in lockstep with some of these groups, at least some of them?
Well, I don't know. Again, you know, I didn't hear back from the party. I do know it's the top leadership of the party in Georgia and in their Senate campaign, which is Rick Scott's outfit, that decided to hook up with Ali Alexander. You know, clearly what's attractive to them is that his massive hundreds of thousands of followers that, you know, that, and they thought that they could activate them to win the Georgia runoff. I mean, one of the problems we have is this kind of playing footsie with the alt-right that you have among some elements of the Republican Party. It's not the entire Republican Party, but there were some Congress members who are very close to Ali Alexander and obviously Alex Jones.
Zach, every American has the right to vote, but not the right to riot. Do you think there's going to be more violence in the months to come under a Biden administration?
I have, unfortunately, almost no doubt. I was the only thing I was surprised of on January 6th is that it didn't happen before then. Everyone at this point comes prepared for battle to protest. It's no longer just these peaceful marches that we have. It is battle.
Greg Powell, let me ask you the same question. Do you anticipate more trouble, more violence in the coming months?
Yeah, absolutely. As Zach was saying, you have people coming to demonstrations armed. This is new business. They're coming to demonstrations armed. I'm very concerned that the police, for example, I've worked with law enforcement. It was a murder scene, a crime scene, the Capitol. A cop had his head crushed by a fire extinguisher. Why weren't people, as they walked out, arrested, had their phones confiscated, which has those selfies, because certainly someone took pictures of the people that killed that cop. Why weren't those phones confiscated? And then they were allowed to literally leave a murder crime scene, which is astonishing. And so what that is a signal to these groups, if you're going to cause mayhem, you may have some help from the people who are supposed to stop the mayhem.
Greg Palast, the investigative journalist, and his colleague Zach Roberts being interviewed by Brian Ross, the former ABC News investigative reporter, raising some really interesting questions and important questions. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Jerome writes in, I can't even imagine how a person convicted in a jury trial of his or her peers with little to no evidence feels listening to all this evidence against Trump. And knowing that he will never be convicted. I know this isn't a criminal or civil trial, but it still illuminates how tilted our court system is for the rich, writes Jerome. Let's take some phone calls from our listeners. We're going to go to Dale in Newport Richey. Dale, thank you for calling. Please speak your mind.
Hello, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling from Newport Richey. From the moment that he said, I'll walk down there with you, he's such a liar. When I understood that people were rioting and Mike Pence and his family had to be evacuated, he knew that because it was communicated to him. And still, at 2:37, he puts out an angry tweet about Mike Pence.
Yeah, this is after Pence has rushed out of the Senate chambers.
So here's a take on this. Have you thought of this? He was willing to sacrifice the life of Mike Pence so that he could then declare martial law and come in and suspend what was occurring and keep his presidency.
I think that's a really good and important question. I hope we get to the bottom of that. I think that is a possibility. Thank you very much, Dale.
You're welcome. Bye.
Thank you. You're listening to 88.5 FM. Let's go to Tommy in St. Petersburg. Hi, Tommy. You're on MNF.
Hello. I thought Ralph Nader was very interesting today on Democracy Now! And his points. And the interview you just did with Greg Collins, that was very powerful. Very powerful indeed. And I'm just sad that Reverend Bruce Wright isn't here to call in and give you his opinions on all of these things going on, because I'm sure he would give his analysis and he would have done it over the years. But I'm sure you're familiar that or heard that Reverend Bruce Bright passed away.
Oh, I did not. I did not.
Yeah, it was a long time, obviously. You know him. We've been calling you for years, talking on your programs and giving his opinions. And, yeah, we lost a very good champion for the people.
Yeah, he was a champion for the homeless. Tommy, thank you. And I didn't hear that about Bruce. My best goes out to his family. That's very tragic news.
Tomorrow in Williams Park, they're going to be doing a memorial for him at 2 o'clock. Hello?
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for letting us know.
Yeah,
very sad news.
Bad news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tommy. Thank you for that. And let's go to Beverly in Largo. Beverly, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, Rob. Listen, I did send a letter and made a phone call to Marco Rubio and Rick Scott. You know, not that it's going to do any good, but I did want to voice my opinion on the impeachment, that they should definitely be voting yes. And also, on this guy that was mentioned, Ali Alexander, I had never heard of him until recently. And I'm on Twitter, and I saw this posting that says, Ali Alexander says the free press should be abolished. He plans to build a mega, mega city for 10 million people. He'll hold rallies again in March, and a lot of people will end up rioting. And this guy's a young black man. I'm trying to figure out what is his motivation.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Greg is really the first one that's talked extensively on this radio station about him. I'm very concerned about his ties to our U.S. Senator Rick Scott, too.
Yes, because we all know who Rick Scott is. But again, you have mentioned this before, and I definitely agree with you that a national commission needs to be established so that, you know, we can establish the truth, one that the findings on both sides will be investigated, the Democratic side, the GOP side, and one that the GOP will accept the findings so that there's no more big lie.
I think it's absolutely necessary. Beverly, thank you. Thank
you're
for
welcome.
That. Thank All right. And let's go to Eric in West Tampa. Eric, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Are you able to hear Mr. Rob Laurie now?
Yeah, I can hear.
Hey, good morning. I'm just calling in reference. I thank you for your show. And thank you all for the fog announcements that the WMNF has been doing for the Tampa Bay area. Thank you again for that. But real quick, on the Democracy Now! Conversation you had with Mr. Ralph Nader, I'm still curious about how we all feel about the fact that Ralph Nader, Ralph Perot, and, Bernie Sanders, you know, split the Democratic ballot, you know, for, you know, to help the Republican
Party. Eric, we talked endlessly about the Ralph Nader situation way back in the year 2000. I think we're going to hold that conversation today because we've got more important things to fry, fish to fry. Let's go to John in Port Richey. Hey, John, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, thanks for the show. I'm going to be real quick. I think this is a good example of power to the people. The Republicans are afraid to vote against Trump because they're afraid to be voted out of office. So I agree with that lady that called the senators. I think there should be a massive effort to call the senators of Florida and say, at the very least, convict the guy. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, John. Lots of emails have come in. James says all congressmen that failed to accept the results of the November 3rd election are complicit in Trump's anarchy. All senators that failed to remove Trump after the first impeachment empowered Trump to create this false rhetoric, writes James in St. Pete. And Jeff writes, this is a case in which a leader is getting people riled up over this notion of stop the steal, which is generally considered to be a crazy idea. That's part of Jeff's email. If you want to comment about today's program, please call us at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on our comment line, which is extension 115. I'll play those comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Janelle. She's live and in the building, and she'll be hosting the Midpoint program next. And thanks to Cindy Philpott for being our phone producer today. I'm Rob Laurie. Have a great weekend. This is WMNF.